Akhatra Foundation presents the Akhatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Today we're getting into a really powerful book. It captured so much about loss and memory. It actually won the 2023 Pulitzer Prize for memoir.
That's right. We're talking about Hwasu's Stay True, Memoir of Grief and Identity.
And Hwasu, I mean, he's fascinating. An academic, a staff writer for The New Yorker, known for this really sharp cultural criticism.
Exactly. But Stay True is different. He takes that critical lens and, you know, turns it inward, focuses on something intensely personal, the college friendship.
It's set at UC Berkeley back in the mid-90s, and it's about this incredibly strong but maybe unlikely bond he formed with another student, Ken Ishida.
Yeah, but the heart of it, the reason it resonates so much, is that this period of, like, youthful energy and discovery, it gets cut short. Brutally, yeah. Senselessly.
So the book becomes this kind of elegy. It captures that intensity of being young, the arrogance sometimes, the searching, and it really digs into how we build our identities from, well, stuff. Culture, music, zines, mixtapes.
Right, and what happens when real tragedy just smashes through all that, forces you to rethink everything you thought was authentic or important.
Precisely. It's a deep meditation on memory, identity, loss, all of it.
Okay, so let's maybe walk through the timeline here. Because the way he thinks about memory and archiving, it seems like that started really early for him.
It really did. He grew up in Cupertino, California, Silicon Valley suburbia. His parents were Taiwanese immigrants.
And he talks about feeling this sort of gentle dislocation, right? Like being between two worlds.
Exactly. Navigating that space between his family's heritage and, you know, typical American suburban life. It made him an observer, someone standing slightly apart.
And his father wasn't always physically present.
No, his dad was an engineer, often working back in Taiwan, which led to this really unique way they stayed connected.
The fax machine. I love that detail.
It's incredible, isn't it? It wasn't just like quick notes. His dad would fax articles, handwritten thoughts. It was this ongoing, documented conversation. An epistolary relationship, basically.
So communication itself became this act of curating, of archiving, even before he was consciously a writer. Wow.
Absolutely. And you can see how that feeds into his teenage years. He built this identity around being, well, contrarian.
Defined by what he wasn't.
Totally. Not mainstream, not preppy, not into popular music. His whole armor was constructed from these cultural signals, indie rock, obscure zines.
And that classic 90s thing. Ironic detachment, like nothing could really touch him.
You got it. That was the persona.
So he gets to UC Berkeley armed with this attitude, ready to judge everyone, sort everything into authentic versus phony.
And then boom, he meets Ken Ishida.
Ken, who is basically the polar opposite, on the surface at least.
Completely. Japanese-American kid from San Diego. Into fraternities wore Abercrombie and Fitch.
Oh man, Abercrombie. The uniform.
Right. And genuinely loved bands like Dave Matthews Band, Pearl Jam, everything Hugh had built his identity against. Ken was the foil.
You can just picture Hugh slicking down his nose at first. That intellectual superiority complex.
Oh, for sure. There was definitely initial condescension. But the friendship still happened. It deepened.
How? What broke through that?
It was slow. It wasn't like one big moment. It was built on shared, mundane things. Smoking cigarettes together, late night drives, and Ken's Acura Integra. Just hanging out.
The ordinary stuff.
Exactly. And Ken was just genuine. He wasn't trying to be cool. He was comfortable being himself, liking what he liked. And that, ironically, started to chip away at Hugh's carefully constructed defenses.
It forced Hugh to see the limits of his own rigid definitions, maybe.
I think so. Ken's openness, his lack of pretense, it made Hugh Sue lower his guard, realize that maybe authenticity wasn't about having the right taste in obscure bands. Maybe it was something else entirely.
So the friendship actually pushed Hugh to grow, to expand his world.
Absolutely. It was a breakthrough. But then the absolute worst happened.
Yeah. Let's talk about the event that changes everything. The core of the book's grief.
It was July 1998. End of their junior year. Ken was killed. It was a carjacking, an attempted robbery that went wrong. Just random, senseless violence.
God, that's awful. Just
senseless.
Senseless.
It shattered everything. It didn't just end Ken's life. It ended the future Hugh had imagined, the one that included Ken. They'd even planned this whole cross-country road trip. Gone.
And for someone like Sue, who relied on irony and intellectual distance,
yeah,
how do you even process that kind of raw, devastating loss? That armor is useless then.
Totally useless. It exposed the complete inadequacy of that worldview. And his immediate reaction wasn't intellectualizing. It was primal. He just started writing.
Writing. Like journaling.
More like frantic archiving. He sat down and just started typing out everything he could remember about Ken. Every detail, every conversation, every stupid joke. It wasn't about making art. He calls it an act of preservation.
Fighting against the erasure of his friend, trying to hold on to him with words.
Exactly. And that desperate act, born of grief, that's the real seed of Stay True. That's where the writer we know now perhaps truly began. Not the critic, but the memoirist.
So the book itself, published over 20 years later, is the culmination of that initial desperate need to remember.
Yes. It took decades of grappling with that loss, revisiting those memories, figuring out how to shape that private pain into something meaningful for others. And it works. It ensures Ken isn't just a victim, a statistic. He's remembered as this vibrant person who profoundly changed Hsu's life.
Okay, so looking at Hsu's core philosophy, there's this massive shift, right? From the young critic to the man who wrote this book.
Huge shift. The young Hsu operated on, let's call it, cultural elitism. Identity was all about curating the right tastes, maintaining that ironic shield.
Keep the world at arm's length.
Right, but Ken's murder just demolished that. Irony has no answer for that kind of pain. It's just empty.
So what replaced it? What's the philosophy behind Stay True?
It becomes about sincerity, about vulnerability, about accepting that life is messy and ambiguous, and you can't just neatly categorize everything.
And the title itself, Stay True, that takes on a whole new weight, doesn't it?
Completely. For the young Hsu, Stay True was probably like, you know, a punk rock slogan, stay true to the underground, don't sell out.
Right, stay true to the image.
But for the older Hsu writing the memoir, it becomes this incredibly complex question. How do you stay true to the memory of someone who's gone? How do you stay true to the person you became because of that loss, even the difficult parts? It shifts from proving authenticity to honoring memory.
So the main driver for writing the book is preserving Ken's memory, building that monument in words, fighting against forgetting.
That feels like the primary motivation, yes, to combat the entropy of memory, as you said earlier. But there's definitely a secondary thing going on, too.
Which is?
Self-excavation. He's really looking hard at his younger self, the judgmental attitudes, the insecurities, the intellectual snobbery.
Holding himself accountable, in a way.
I think so. It's an honest look back, acknowledging maybe he spent too much time critiquing Ken's taste in music and not enough time just appreciating Ken himself. Hindsight gives that painful clarity.
That kind of youthful arrogance, though, defining yourself by what you dislike. So many people go through that phase trying to figure out who they are.
Absolutely. And Hiss nails it with this line I think is worth quoting. The problem with trying to be a contrarian is that you're constantly owned by the things you supposedly hate.
Wow. Yeah. If your identity is just reacting against something, that thing still controls you, defines your boundaries.
Exactly. It actually limits your world rather than expanding it, which leads to a bigger lesson here about connection, doesn't it?
Yeah, connection over curation. Like, identity isn't this fixed thing you create in isolation with your cool record collection. It's forged in relationships.
Especially, it seems, with people who challenge you, people who are different. Ken's real gift to Hsu wasn't shared taste. It was forcing him to see beyond his own narrow framework.
And thinking about grief, that metaphor Hsu uses is really striking. It's not this violent storm you just have to survive.
No, it's quieter, more permanent, he says. Grief is a humble house guest.
Humble house guest. I like that.
Yeah, it suggests something that arrives, settles in, changes the feel of the place, your mind, your life. But you learn to live alongside it. It becomes part of the landscape. You don't expel it, you integrate it.
Which makes you think differently about, well, all the little things from the past.
Yeah.
The stuff we usually dismiss.
Right. Those mixtapes, the zines, the letters, the photos. The memoir shows how that mundane stuff, the ephemera, becomes incredibly precious over time. They're like the sacred texts of your own history.
They're the tangible proof of who you were, who you loved, what mattered, even if you didn't fully get it at the time.
Absolutely. Ken lives in those specific remembered details, not in some grand abstract idea. Okay, so maybe we should try and distill this down. What are the core takeaways here?
Okay, three key things. First, I think an emotional insight. The journey in Stay True is really about the courage it takes to be vulnerable. It suggests that being open-hearted, even knowing it can lead to immense pain, is ultimately braver than hiding behind cynicism or irony.
Yeah, shedding that protective coolness to actually feel things. Okay, second, an intellectual insight. Memory isn't just passive recall. It's an active, ongoing act of curation. We are all constantly choosing what to remember, how to frame it. And maybe things like writing or art are essential tools for that archival process for our own lives. Those trivial artifacts, they're the primary sources.
That makes sense. And finally, a universal insight. Maybe we learn the most not when people agree with us, but when they challenge us gently, lovingly. The friendships that really change us might be the ones that cross those lines we draw around ourselves, the ones with people who seem like our opposites.
Right. The people who force us to question our own assumptions. Stay True kind of nudges you, the listener, to maybe look again at the people in your own life. Are you defining yourself too much by what you reject? Is there someone seemingly mainstream or uncool who might actually have something profound to teach you?
It's a powerful thought to end on. That openness can come from unexpected places. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.